2034, a novel of the next world war, by Elliot Ackerman and Admiral James Stavridis. 1. The Wenri Incident 1447 March 12, 2034 GMT plus 8 South China Sea. Captain Sarah Hunt, Commodore of the John Paul Jones Command Group, took her ships on a Freedom of Navigation patrol 12 miles off Mischief Reef in the eternally disputed Spratly Islands. These were international waters, but the People's Republic of China claimed them as their own. The Chinese had been moving their territory lines further and further south for decades, with the goal of claiming all of the South Pacific. It was their job to try and keep them in check. 1051 March 12, 2034 GMT plus 430, Strait of Hormuz. Major Chris Wedge Mitchell could hear his great-grandfather now. Back in my day, it wasn't always bang like you've got now. No targeting computers, no autopilot, just your skill, your luck, and the controls. The fighter Wedge was flying wasn't hard to control at all. Even flying so close to Iranian airspace, the F-35's navigation computer did all the flying for him. Wedge didn't have to do anything but watch the controls and admire the view. It was almost funny how he'd been assigned to such a high-tech mission. His squadron buddies had always joked that he should have been born earlier. His call sign, Wedge, was the world's first and simplest tool. Wedge switched off his autopilot. He knew there'd be hell to pay for, but he'd deal with that when he got back. He wanted to feel it, the thrill of flying on the edge, even if for only a second. 1447 March 12, 2034 GMT plus 8, South China Caesar's men had spotted a fishing trawler with smoke billowing from the aft. A crew of a dozen people scrambled around the deck as they tried to put out the fire. Procedure was clear. Hunt's ships would only divert from their course to Providiade as an absolute last resort. What was the ship's nationality? Hunt asked, considering her options. No flag flew on the ship. We're diverting to Providiade, she ordered, to the confusion of her crew. A ship in peril, sailing without a flag or a distress signal. Something doesn't add up. 447 March 12, 2034 GMT Fowler, Washington, D.C. D.R. Sandeep Chowdhury, Deputy National Security Advisor, was scheduled to be in the Situation Room to monitor the progress of a test flight over the Strait of Hormuz. The room had an LED screen with a map displaying the status of U.S. military forces all over the world, transmitting via an encrypted video teleconference link. With him was Rear Admiral John T. Hendrickson, an old colleague of Chowdhury. They were focusing on two critical events. One was the planned testing of a new electromagnetic disruptor for the F-35. The fighter had been unresponsive to communications for 6 minutes. The other event concerned the John Paul Jones Command Group as it diverted from its Freedom Navigation Patrol to investigate a distress ship. 1528 March 12, 2034 GMT plus 8, South China Caesar's crew worked quickly, but the fishing trawler's crew resisted. Hunt wondered why. As her ships got closer, she could see the trawler's name, Wenri. Once the crew members of the Wenri had been placed under arrest, she boarded it to get a closer look. The captain of the cruiser entered a key to a locked steel hatch they'd found. Opening it, she found racks and racks of miniature hard drives and plasma screens. She had no idea what any of it was, but it seemed like bad news, so she ordered the crew to load it onto their ship for further investigation. 1347 March 12, 2034 GMT plus 430, Strait of Hormuz. This is it, Wedge thought. Or close to it, at least. His F-35 hit a pocket of turbulence, but he got the plane under control, proving that his skills were just as good as the computer's. Back at base, command demanded he turn his navigation computer back on. Roger, he said, activating the autopilot. But for some reason, his F-35 diverted course, heading straight for Iran. Another series of alarmed calls came from command, insisting that he turn his navigation computer on. It is on, Wedge said, tapping his screen. but his computer wasn't responding. Wait, avionics are out. Switching to manual override. Wedge pulled at his stick and stamped on the pedals, but nothing happened. The F-35 slowly started to descend. 7:23 March 12, 2034 GMT Fowler, Washington, D.C. The updates kept coming. While Hunt loaded the technology onto her ship, they received news that a contingent of People's Liberation Army warships, including the nuclear-powered carrier Zhanghe, were heading directly for the John Paul Jones. The most puzzling update of all was that the controls of the F-35 had locked up. If the pilot isn't flying it, and we aren't operating it remotely, then who the hell is? Chowdhury snapped. This was interrupted by the surprising arrival of the Chinese defense attaché, Admiral Lin Bao. Chowdhury went out to meet him. "You have something of ours," Lin Bao said. "A very small ship, the Wenrui. It is in your best interests to return it." Although Chowdhury worked for the first unaffiliated American president in modern history, the administration's position regarding freedom of navigation in the South China Sea remained firm. Chowdhury repeated those policies to Lin Bao. "You don't have time for this," Lin Bao said. "Your mother has been texting you. She wants to take your daughter outside to play." Chowdhury checked his phone. The message was as Lin Bao had said. "We have ships coming to intercept yours," Lin Bao said. "Escalation would be a mistake. In return for the Wenrui, we'll give you back your F-35. "You don't have an F-35, Chowdhury said. "Go back to your situation room and check," Lin Bao said mildly. "You have 1 hour." 16-12 March 12, 2034 GMT plus 8, South China, Sea. Hunt saw the ships approaching, 6 in total. The Zhanghe was as formidable as anything the U.S. Navy could muster. They formed a circle around Hunt's flotilla and demanded the release of the Wenrui. "Call headquarters," Hunt said. "Negative, ma'am. We can't seem to connect." "Christ. Ask our other ships, then." "I've got nothing," the radioman said, eyes wide. "All of our communications are down." 14-22 March 12, 2034 GMT plus 4:30, Strait of Hormuz. Wedge knew his mission had been compromised. Time was short. He pulled out his pistol and began tearing his cockpit apart, destroying all of the sensitive items within it. By the time he landed, he was out of bullets and left with a broken plane. 16:36 March 12, 2034 GMT plus 8, South China Sea, the John Paul Jones continued to wait for help from command. Hunt knew it wouldn't come. She knew that she was now part of something bigger than she could understand. She saw the torpedo approaching. Her crew braced for impact, but Hunt stood still. Her opponent had made their move. Was the torpedo aimed at them, or the Wenrui? Who was the aggressor? No one would ever agree wars were built on disagreements like that. Whoever was to blame for the years to come wouldn't be decided today. The war would come first, and whoever won would get to decide. 17:13 March 12, 2034 GMT Fowler, Washington, D.C. Lin Bao's voice sounded otherworldly on the line. "For decades, your Navy has sailed through our waters, flown through our allies' airspace. Today it has seized one of our vessels. But you insist that you are the aggrieved party, and we must appease you." Chowdhury swallowed. "That is the position of the administration," he said. "But if you have a counter-proposal, we would consider it." "Silence." "We do," Lin Bao said. Then the power went out. When it came back on, neither Hendrickson or Chowdhury could log back onto their computers. Their passwords didn't work anymore. 2. Blackout. 18:42 March 12, 2034 GMT Fowler, Washington, D.C. En route to Beijing. At that moment, Admiral Lin Bao was already on a private jet on the way out of the country. It felt like his entire career had built up to this moment, from his time at the academy to the fleet. Now he stood at the summit. He looked out of the window, as if to see what the view from the top was like. Darkness, it would seem. A night sky without stars. The American narrative was that they had captured the Wenrui, a spy ship filled with technology that the Chinese government would do anything to get back. For its capture to start the crisis that China wanted, they needed a bargaining chip to force the Americans' hand. That's where the F-35 came in, hacked by their Iranian allies. Linebaugh knew the dance their two countries had done many times before. A crisis would lead to some talk, then pushing things to the brink, and eventually de-escalate and end with a trade. The F-35 for the Wenrui. It would never occur to the Americans that it was never their objective to steal the F-35 or keep the junk that was on the Wenrui. What the Chinese wanted was the crisis itself, an excuse for them to strike in the South China Sea and finally unify their rightful territory. What was said of the 9/11 attacks would be said of the Wenrui incident. It wasn't a failure of American intelligence, but instead of their imagination. The more they struggled, the more trapped they would become. 2102 March 12, 2034 GM Tower, Washington, D.C. Government email accounts and cell phones were all down. Everyone knew that history was unfolding at that moment, but no one understood what the events were or what the history would be. So much was happening, and yet they had no news. Everything was compromised. 6:42 March 13, 2034 GMT plus 4:30, Bandar Abbas Wedge waited in his stinking cell until it was his time to be interrogated. When the blindfold was yanked off, he saw a scarred man dressed in a decorated uniform. The man tried to gain his confidence by treating him as a friend, but Wedge knew interrogations were more about emotional control than they were about information. Wedge took a gamble and provoked the interrogator using his observational skills. It worked, but the interrogator beat him for it. The last thing Wedge saw before he blacked out was the blink of a video camera in the ceiling. 11:01 March 13, 2034 GMT plus 8 South China Sea, nearly half of Sarahan's crew died that morning. With their technology disabled, she could only watch. Now, her ship was on the edge of capsizing. On the bridge, she saw two planes approaching them. But they didn't fire. They flew close enough that she could see the silhouettes of the pilots, and they dipped a wing in a salute, a message from the Chinese to them. A moment later, their radios turned back on. 12:06 March 13, 2034 GMT plus 8, Beijing Admiral Linebaugh sat with his superior, Defense Minister General Chang. Our mission was to send a message, Chang explained. If the entire flotilla was destroyed, who would deliver it? The point is not to start a war, but to get the Americans to finally listen and respect the sovereignty of our waters. 16:07 March 22, 2034 GM Tower, Washington, D.C. A flotilla wiped out. A pilot held captive. The result? Public unity, but also a public outcry, growing louder and louder. We have to do something. Choudhury's superior, National Security Advisor Trent Wise Carver, seemed to agree. He believed the U.S. military needed to demonstrate its unquestionable supremacy to the world again. The president had her doubts and hoped for a de-escalation. But 10 days into the crisis, Wedge's name was leaked to the media, who soon after paid a visit to the Mitchell family home. They found quite a story: four generations of Marine fighter pilots, a link from America Now to America Then. The administration now faced an immense amount of pressure to bring him back home. Choudhury went through his news feed, reading every bit of coverage on the crisis with China. Opinions ran from cautioning against a phony war that opportunistic politicians could use, to editorials about the rising tide of aggression that threatened the free people of the world. And then, the footage came out, intercepted by Cyber Command and leaked to the media. A grainy video of Wedge being beaten by a brutish Iranian officer. Diverging views quickly came to a consensus. We shouldn't be pushed around by anyone. Had we forgotten who we were? The spirit that made us a single, mighty nation. De-escalation would now be impossible. 3. Blinding the elephant. 6:37 April 23, 2034 GMT plus 8 Beijing, the Americans deployed a significant naval force towards the Spratly Islands, an unanticipated event, to the irritation of Minister Chang. "They're doing this only to prove that they can," he sighed. "The Americans have never been capable of acting patiently. They change their government and politics as often as the seasons. They are governed by their emotions, by their careless morality, and their belief in their indispensability. A fine disposition for making movies, but not to survive as we have for millennia. Where will they be after this?" 427 April 26, 2034 GMT, plus 530 New Delhi, Chowdhury was woken up by a Tenskall. "They got the drop on us. All the ships we sent to the Spratly Islands, their technology all shut down. Navigation systems glitched, pilots couldn't eject, missiles wouldn't fire. They came at us with everything. Offensive cyber capabilities let the Chinese beat the larger force. 37 warships destroyed, thousands of sailors dead. It was impossible for the world to ignore this." Wise Carver sent Chowdhury to New Delhi, where Wedge had been transferred, to get him out before news came out of their defeat, which would surely make the Iranians withdraw. They had to get him out now. They were at war. Left with no official channels, Chowdhury used his family connections. His estranged uncle, Vaisan and Patel, agreed to meet with him and pull some strings. They watched CNN's coverage of the American Navy's complete defeat. "Your country's defeat is just beginning," Patel said. "America didn't use to start wars, it used to finish them. But now, it is the reverse. You start wars you can't finish. Our Navy is stronger than theirs," Chowdhury argued. "And that's not even mentioning our tactical and strategic nuclear capability." The old admiral shook his head. "With those weapons, no one wins." 1142 May 13, 2034 GMT plus 9 Yokosuka Naval Base. Sarah Hunt was given orders to lead a retaliatory fleet against the Chinese. Under her command, she stripped down the avionics in one of her fighter squadrons as a countermeasures against China's cyber capabilities. She knew that the next time they fought, they would be fighting blind. In protest, the commanding officer of the squadron resigned, leaving a vacancy that Wedge Mitchell, now newly freed and recuperated, knew was the perfect opportunity for him. 9 o'clock May 21, 2034 GMT Fower Quantico. Every station was interrupted by the American president's public service announcement. "Our intelligence services report a large Chinese fleet surrounding Taiwan, our ally. This presents a clear and present not only to their independence but to our own. Recent military setbacks have limited our options for dealing with this threat, but I assure you that our options remain robust. To the citizens and government of the People's Republic of China, your cyber weapons have limited our ability to offer a conventional, more measured response. We do not wish war, but we will pursue it if forced to. Turn your ships around, and calamity can still be avoided. A violation of Taiwan's sovereignty is a clear red line for the United States. Cross it and face overwhelming force. To stand up for ourselves, I have authorized the deployment of tactical nuclear weapons. 4. Red Lines, 2347 May 20 2034 GMT plus 8 South China Sea. The operation against Taipei, or Taiwan as the West insisted on calling it, was playing out into faces. As Sun Tzu advised, let your plans be dark and impenetrable as night. When you move, fall like a thunderbolt. The Chinese fleet would suddenly reappear around Taiwan. It would take weeks for the Americans or any other power to counter it, and by then Taipei was sure to crumble, voting to be annexed into the People's Republic. Not a single drop of blood would be spilled. Then America threatened a nuclear strike. If Taipei votes to dissolve, then the Americans can't launch a strike against us, Linebaugh said to Minister Chang. They aren't crazy enough to do that. Perhaps. Even if they did, they don't have the positional data to hit our fleet. Firing that close would be catastrophic to Taipei, too. 2137 May 21, 2034 GMT Fower, Washington, D.C. Few people apart from the president had known she would announce the authorization during her speech. Chowdhury sat there, stunned. "There's no way we'll follow through with it," he said. Was it a question or a statement? "They just have to believe that we will," Hendrickson said. "We have ships on the way to the Chinese mainland. Once they get there, China will have to pull resources away from Taiwan. This'll buy us time." 10:27 June 18, 2034 GMT plus 8 20 nautical miles off the coast of Taipei. "I had hoped Taiwan would vote to dissolve, so that we could avoid a forced invasion," Minister Chang said. "That seems unlikely now. But the Americans don't intimidate me. If they'd wanted to threaten us, they would have launched a massive cyber attack. But their deregulated online infrastructure has left them vulnerable. This nuclear threat is outdated and absurd. It's time to show them what we think of it." "How do we do that?" Lin Bao asked. "We won't, not personally. With the Americans focusing their naval power towards us, the Barents Sea has been left unguarded. Our Russian allies now have access to the subsurface internet cables that service the United States, greatly slowing their services. It'll be a gentle reminder that bombs aren't the only way to cripple a nation. We'll cut a cable or two and scare them off." 14:22 June 24, 2034 GMT plus to Barents Sea. The Russians knew that any scenario that weakened the Americans was in their favor. De-escalation wasn't really in their interest. Disruption was. Chaos, a change in the order of the world. When the time came, they detonated enough charges to sever every single cable. 21:02 June 26, 2034 GMT plus 8 300 nautical miles off the coast of Zhangjiang. The internet went out across the whole eastern seaboard. 80% gone in the Midwest, 50% on the West Coast. A nationwide power outage, airports closing, markets panicking, hospitals shutting down. China had crossed the red line. Sarah Hunt listened to the updates on her handheld radio and understood the implications. She sent as many people out of the room as she could. The idea of receiving the task in front of a younger generation was difficult. She knew they'd have to live with the consequences longer than any of them. She waited for the message, and it arrived. 11:15 June 30, 2034 GMT plus 8, Taiwan Taoyuan International Airport. Lin Bao thought he'd known the Americans. He'd been wrong. Every member of his crew knew someone who died at Zhangjiang, had family in the blast zone. Countless friends who had nothing to do with the Navy, but lived by the port city. Not gone in an instant, a white flash. Hospitals in Beihai, Maoming, Zhangjiang, even Shenzhen were filled to capacity. The American nuclear strike had been swift and decisive. Their invasion of Taiwan had been equally so. Minister Chang's expression was grim. "We are in a dangerous position. We have 1, maybe 2 weeks until the Americans bring the rest of their fleets to our mainland. They'll strangle our access as we have to this island. With that, China will be under threat of an invasion and a nuclear threat besides. The Americans have crossed that line. Once a nation's dropped one nuclear weapon, the stigma of a second or a third is lessened. What comes next?" Lin Bao asked. "Perhaps they could hold on to Taipei and negotiate with the Americans." He tried to remind Minister Chang that the original plan had been based on de-escalating, as Sun Tzu had once advised. Minister Chang stood to leave. "Sun Tzu also tells us, on difficult ground, press on. On encircled ground, devise stratagems. On death ground, fight." 5. On death ground. 22:46 July 19, 2034 GMT plus 5:30 New Delhi. Chowdhury had been sent back to New Delhi to deal with a dispute regarding the Iranians accidentally seizing an Indian tanker. Chowdhury hadn't liked the way his boss had said it. Back to New Delhi. In the middle of this conflict, a rabid kind of nativism was resurging in the American psyche. Unlike generations past, the country had failed to come together, even faced by the specter of a nuclear world. nuclear retaliation by the Chinese seemed inevitable. Where would it hit, and how? Decades of partisanship had taken its toll, and the administration was under fire from all sides. Wise Carver had cleaned house in his national security staff, choosing true loyalists to him to best respond to whatever came. And so Chowdhury was quietly sent back. 9:37 July 20, 2034 GMT plus 8 Beijing. The Politburo Standing Committee had approved Lin Bao's plan, every detail accounted for. Which is to say that only Lin Bao's signature appeared on the documents. He'd been reduced to a fall guy. He was now accountable and responsible for every detail from the launch platform, to the loading of the nuclear material, to the readiness of the crews, to the accurate delivery to the targets. The targets. He promised himself it would be the last order he ever followed. 32.7157 degrees N. 117.1611 degrees wet 29.3013 degrees N. 94.7977 degrees west San Diego. Galveston. 8:17 July 20, 2034 GMT plus 5:30 New Delhi. Chowdhury was invited by his uncle Vice Admiral Patel on strictly unofficial business. Upon arrival, he was introduced as my nephew who works for the American government to an intimidating man with scars, who was introduced as Qasim, a Persian friend. Chowdhury recognized him as the man who had brutally interrogated Wedge Mitchell. The fact of the matter is, Patel said, neither of your nations has behaved in their best interests. America's hubris has finally grown larger than its greatness. You spilled blood and treasure for what? Freedom of navigation. Taiwan's sovereignty. Isn't the world large enough for your government and Beijing's? He turned to Qasim. How does it serve Iran to provoke us, a neutral power with a population 15 times greater than yours? We're capable of taking our ship back if we have to, and more, if we're provoked. He sat a little straighter, addressing both of them. You represent countries that began this war. I represent a country that is capable of finishing it. Without our invention, this situation will continue to escalate until it ends us all. The responsibility of arbitrating the Sino-American war, Patel said, now fell to India, but only if both Iran and America cooperated. Before either of them could reply, the television in the corner of the room showed a news update. Patel exhaled, as if in pain. San Diego and Galveston. 6. The Tondava, 1532 July 28, 2034 GMT plus 8 South China Sea. It was perhaps the loneliest moment of Sarah Hunt's life. On her desk lay her orders in three pages, one for each of the targets. Xiamen population 7.1 million, Fuzhou population 7.8 million, and lastly Shanghai population 32.24 million. Shanghai's inclusion seemed horrifically disproportionate. As China's most populous city, a strike would guarantee a counter-strike on New York, Los Angeles, or even Washington. It was the broadest definition of a suicide mission. Accomplishing it would assure the doom of mankind. She'd received a call from Hendrickson. He had it on good authority from a friend that the Indians might intervene. Hunt lingered on the fantasy and was interrupted by Wedge knocking on the door. Hunt couldn't help but like him. He was insubordinate, but only in the broadest definition. He was insubordinate to the time he lived in, refusing to stop believing in the old ways. Where did Wedge think all of this was going to lead? Did he hope that one day a long-faded order of things would return? It didn't matter. She gave him the coordinates for the counter-strike. "We'll be ready the day after tomorrow," Wedge said. "That's fine," Hunt said, the words catching in her throat. "Listen, a lot of folks are calling this a suicide mission." "I don't do suicide missions, ma'am," Wedge said. "We'll get it done and make it back." 6:42 July 30, 2034 GMT Fowler, Washington, D.C. Walking back into the White House, Chowdhury recalled the rest of his conversation with his uncle Patel. "Certain parties within your government are strongly interested in escalating the conflict," Patel said. They've knowingly misinterpreted our actions. As such, it's critical for you to convey to them both what we have done and what we will plan to do. Patel showed him a series of photographs. These were taken from one of our upgraded Calvary-class submarines. We've used one to sink the Zhanghe. Xiao Duri was baffled. You sunk one of China's nuclear carriers, but you're not allying with the United States. Our interests are in de-escalating. If your government retaliates for Galveston or San Diego, we'll attack an American ship next. We've already shown these photos to your national security advisor. He turned us away. I doubt he showed any of this to your president. You need to communicate this to her. Directly. Now, Xiao Duri hurried to the president's office, only to be blocked by Wise Carver. Millions of lives are at stake, Xiao Duri said, shaking. You have an obligation to pass on what you know. I am not obligated to pass along misinformation, Wise Carver said. Besides, aren't you supposed to be back in New Delhi? Xiao Duri knew what had to be done. He hadn't come this far only to turn back. He struggled to open the door to the president's office, tumbling to the floor with Wise Carver. Before Secret Service agents could lead him away, the door opened. What the hell is going on out there? The president demanded. 1857 July 30, 2034 GMT plus 828 degrees 2241 and 124 degrees 5813. Uage was about to start his last communications with command. After that, he'd go dark. The day was bright and clear, perfect visibility for the mission. The conditions were ideal for him to see the approaching jet fighters. 1916 July 30, 2034 GMT plus 8 China Sea. 37 minutes had passed since Hunt had given the order to launch. The White House had contacted her and ordered her, on the president's authority, to call off the strike. There was only one problem. Wedge's team wasn't responding. What if the Indians got him? Her radio man said. Wise Carver laughed over the telecoms. That would simplify things, wouldn't it? 1858 July 30, 2034 GMT plus 828 degrees 2241 and 124 degrees 5813. Uage Mitchell flew as well as he knew he would. The other two jets had been shot down by the Indian interceptors, but he shook them with clever maneuvers and claimed his first ever air victory. He felt dizzy. Was it the blood loss or the thrill of the achievement? His engine smoking and leaking fuel, he climbed up to 10,000 feet, the height needed for the nuclear payload to arm itself. Wedge hit the release, but it didn't work. Didn't matter. He had a job to do. He pushed the stick forward into a steep dive. The city of Beijing came up rushing to meet him, buildings, cars, people. He'd always accepted that this was a dirty business. This didn't feel like a suicide. It felt necessary. Like he was the end of something and the start of something new. 1919 July 30th, 2034 GMT plus 8 Beijing. Linebao was taken to a hotel by men from internal security, where he was told other key members of the Chinese government were meeting to discuss the response to the Zhanghe sinking. India's involvement might become a positive development if used correctly. It could make it so their strike on Galveston and San Diego was the last of the war. They could make the argument to their people that they had been the victors. The men opened the door, and Linebao stepped inside. It wasn't a suite. It was a single room with a queen-size bed and a dresser. Everything, including the floor, was covered in plastic tarps. On the bed was a note. This time you picked wrong. I am sorry. It wasn't signed. Keep your eyes open, Linebao demanded himself. He stared out the window, to the grim Beijing skyline. What is that on the horizon? Linebao wondered. Although it was late, there was a light as bright as 20 sunrises, and an incredible noise that shook the windows and made sure no one would hear the gunshot. Because no battle is ever won. They are not even fought. The field only reveals to man his own folly and despair, and victory is an illusion of philosophers and fools. William Faulkner,